All in preparation for the challenges that lie ahead. This is a show that feeds the mind with inspiration and truth on the issues of the day. If it's important to your life, you'll find it here. Hosted by Malcolm Out Loud.
Well, if you've been paying attention, then you've been watching the economic forecasters and financial experts, and they're saying beware, the economy's looking pretty shaky. And the result may catch a lot of people off guard in a lot of ways. So, and it's not just the stock market, which has been dropping more recently. There are a lot of factors involved, and actually a lot of the signs have been there for some time. But the question is all this coming to a head? And where are we going to be just ahead? And how do we prepare for all this? What should we do? Well, coming on the show today, we have Harry Dent, economic forecaster, New York Times best-selling author. We've got a lot of show today for you. This is Real Life. We're on the brink this afternoon. It's Malcolm Out Loud here. Also, have you considered where to live in the country? Maybe you're looking at a move or a long-distance move in the country? Well, I've got the 10 most expensive places to raise a family in the United States. That's it's important. I mean, that can make a big factor. In fact, the range on this thing goes from, you know, it can be $50,000 up to $100,000. So it can actually be doubled depending on the market you choose to live. Also, later on in the show, I've got six factors that point to a global recession coming in 2016 that will just about guarantee that. We'll talk more about that. Listen, the whole premise of this is to be prepared. It's everybody to be prepared. It's like when you're, you know, the Boy Scout model. You've got to be prepared. You've got to know what's coming so you can base things on your businesses, your careers, your family life, all of that. So, also, I've got a fascinating discussion I want to have with you that you must, you've got to hear this. Seven emerging technologies that will change the world forever. And I'll tell you what, these technologies blew my mind. I mean, they really did. I had no idea we were that far ahead in these particular areas. So we're going to look at some of the future. I've got a futuristic expert. We're going to look at some of this as well. And I don't know that we'll get to all of them today, but we'll certainly cover them over the next few days, these emerging technologies. And they're going to change the way we live. I'm telling you, they're going to change everything about this lifestyle. And make no mistake about it. So first, let's get to those most expensive places to raise a family in the United States. Now, again, what I'm going to share with you now in this top 10 list, okay? This is based on a two-parent, two-child family, okay? So it's a family of four. Now, if you don't have a family of four, you have a family of three or a family of five, well, then you've got to take that into consideration, or maybe you're single. But all the factors are still going to play in here, clearly. But the range here, as I stated to you a moment ago, can go from $50,000 to $100,000, depending on where you live. That's a lot of variation there, I'll tell you. Now, this is all data that's been collected from the Economic Policy Institute. They're a nonpartisan think tank, so you're getting some real information here. And this doesn't mean a middle-class lifestyle, they say in the report. This is just living, folks. This is just getting by. This is no savings. Keep that in mind. This is just paying the bills and existing, okay? So you got to remember that. Anything above this is gravy, what I'm going to share with you next. So the study looked at over 600 metro areas and calculated the cost of living in each based on the cost of housing, child care, food, transportation, health care, about all necessities are in here. School supplies, clothing, they're in here as well, taxes. So everything's sort of in here, okay? Child care is the single most expensive line item for those families. So if you've got children, then you probably already know that. If you don't, well, you're ahead of the game, at least in that area. In 500 of the 600 areas the EPR looked at, child care was the biggest annual expense, ranging from a low of $12,500 a year. Well, that was an average, actually. Climbed above $30,000 a year in one city. So that's a pretty big difference, friends, I'll tell you. Well, number 10 on this list, we're going to start right here, Danbury, Connecticut. How about a family of four will cost $89,000 just to pay the bills in Danbury, Connecticut? Now, Connecticut's pretty expensive overall anyways, so that's an expensive place to live. San Francisco, I've heard they're expensive. They take number nine on the list. They say here that the housing costs are the highest in the country in San Francisco. That's number nine on the list. Number eight, Ithaca, New York. This college town, home to Cornell University and, of course, Ithaca College. How about a family of four? Over $92,000 to live there just to pay the bills. And number seven, Well, that's in Poughkeepsie, Newburgh, Middletown, New York, in that area. Okay, $92,800 in this number 7 spot for a family of 4. Number 6 is Honolulu. I always knew Honolulu was expensive, and they're over $94,000. Part of the deal here is food course. They're the highest in the country, over $11,000, you're saying, for that family. And that's pretty much in part to the shipping cost to get it to Honolulu. Also, Stamford, Norwalk, Connecticut, number 5 on the list, over $97,000 to get by. Number 4, well, that was New York City. They're not number 1, 2, or 3. Number 4, the Big Apple, how about just over $98,000? Well, actually, $98,700 for Family 4 to make it to New York City. Number 3 is Westchester County, New York. So another New York address, $99,500. Okay. Number 2, Nassau, Suffolk, New York, $103,600 for Family 4. They spent a lot on rent up there, too, and mortgages. That's a pretty high amount of the dollars. And number 1 of the most expensive places to raise a family in the United States, maybe you guessed this, I don't know, Washington, D.C. And I've heard this many times now. You know, they make a lot of money in Washington, D.C. We pay them well, a lot of the government workers and all of that, but cost of living is very, very high. $106,493 for a family of 4, child care. Wow. If you're in a child care business, this is the place you want to open your business. How about over $31,000 a year? That is a little bit of money. Just over $31,000 just to child care for the kids. I mean, that's insane. I mean, that for some people, that's their whole salary for a year in other areas of the country. In Washington, D.C., that's just to keep the kids attended to. So you can see the difference here in cost in these most expensive cities. It does make a pretty big difference. Well, listen, I've got here, again, some of these emerging technologies I want to talk to you about ahead. I find some of them just mind-blowing. We're going to cover that a little bit later on the show. Also, some factors that point to a global recession. I'm sorry to say, we've got that as well. But first, coming up, Harry Dent, economic forecaster, New York Times best-selling author. I think you'll appreciate the information that Harry's got. So buckle up the seatbelt. You're going to get some economic information and powerhouse this afternoon. It's Malcolm Allad. We'll be right back with more Life. Well, we are back, and this is Real Life, and we're on the brink. It's Malcolm Out Loud. You know, stocks seem to be not doing so well. Retail sales have been slumping. How have you heard the news in the last week or so? Walmart's closing 154 stores in the U.S., and I think about 250 around the world, actually. Meanwhile, China's markets have been in free fall, and retail sales fell in December, and I wonder if it's too early to mention the R word. Not something we're all looking forward to after what we've been through these past years. But again, this is Real Life. Welcome back to the show, folks. And I want to bring forward here and introduce you to Harry Dent. And Harry is an economic forecaster and New York Times best-selling author. Hey, his newest book, he's got a series of great books out there. Harry's been, he's been at this for a long time. Newest book is called The Demographic Cliff. He's also the editor of the free newsletter, Economy and Markets. And again, we'll talk more about how you can find out more about Harry just ahead. But let's get into it. I want to tell you, Harry, a couple of thoughts up front and get your opinion on this. So the last week or so, I want to give you three specific quotes I want to tell folks about. Investors Business Daily says, Obamanomics, they call it, has created the most anti-business environment in post-war history. Businesses faced a record onslaught of regulation, a world-high 35% tax rate, higher minimum wages, hostile legislators who routinely demonized profits and success, an erratic Fed, and growing uncertainty about the U.S. political future. Why invest? Well, the bigger picture is recessions don't just happen, they're made. And it looks like we're making one now. Now, this is Investors Business Daily. Now, the Wall Street Journal comes out and they say, well, continued growth, but a slowdown in labor market improvement. This is the prevailing sentiment among a panel of economists. The Wall Street Journal assembled for an outlook on the economy in 2016. Economists here see risk of recession somewhere, they're saying, between 20 and 40%, so says the Wall Street Journal. And lastly, the Business Insider. They say the R word is back. After the worst 10-day start to a year ever, investors are anxious about not just the prospects for financial markets, but the U.S. economy as a whole. And now people are talking recession. Looking at the real economy of car buyers and plane riders yield few signs that things are slowing down, they say. And a reading on consumer confidence published this past week show that Americans continue to feel good about their economic prospects. Signs out of the financial economy indicate that we're still not nearing a recession anytime soon, says Business Insider. But the U.S. economy, we know, the U.S. consumer is at the heart of this economy, Harry. And right now, there are few signs they're saying that this force is rolling over. But I guess it depends who you talk to on any given day. What do you think? What's the state of the state of affairs on the economy, Harry?
Well, Malcolm, I never listen to the consumer or surveys in the current, because how do you think the economy looked in Japan in late 1989 before they had the biggest collapse in their history? And I was one of the few people that predicted that, because I knew that demographic trends and spending for their baby boom would decline sharply. 1929, how do you things look before things collapsed? In 2000, in 2007, before our last two stock market crashes, things looked fine. You can't look and say, oh, the economy's okay and consumers are confident. The longer the economy goes up, the more confident people will be. But there are fundamental trends that we study, unlike anybody else, that shows when people are going to spend or not, regardless of their intentions. I don't care what people think about the economy. People spend what they earn, and they primarily spend to raise their families and kids. And when that cycle is over, which started to peak in late 2007, which we predicted 20 years before, and at the same time predicted Japan was going to collapse way ahead of us, it's a lot of it's just demographics. Generations spend, and then they don't spend. You also get debt cycles. We've had the greatest debt cycle in history, and when it started to collapse in 2008, what did governments do and central banks? Oh, we're just going to print trillions of dollars to offset the downturn. That is treating a symptom, not the cause, and that only leads to a worse crisis later. So I think we're getting this. I see signs now after 6-7 years of expansion only on artificial stimulus, not on fundamentals of baby boom spending, not on debt overloads and everything else working against the economy. This has just been pure stimulus, and it is wearing off. I think we're going to collapse this year. 2016 is going to be the next 2008. It's just going to be worse and a bit harder.
So you are in that mindset. I thought you might be. You know, don't we often see in a second term presidency, and certainly in an eighth year, if you look back historically, it's usually a tough year anyways, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but you know, election years tend to be positive for the market, but so does the fifth year of every decade. And so does December and January. And we've had failures on all of these. Right. 2015 was the only fifth year of a decade in since the stock market was invented that we've had a down year. And December and January, like in 2007 and 8, which ended up being two bad years for the stock market afterwards, did not have a Santa Claus rally, and the first 10 days of January were the worst we've ever seen ever, and that's a bad sign. None of these are guarantees, but for me, somebody already looking, since the baby boom first peaked in late 2007, now the affluent sector, the top 10 to 20%, are peaking at age 54, many years later than the peak for the average person at 46. We're due for another downturn, and guess which country in the world, especially the developed world, has the worst demographics in the next decade? It's Germany, the one country that people think is going to hold Europe together. So I am not optimistic about the next several years, and I think the market is finally starting to get this. Earnings are down, and stocks are going to start to get this reality.
Well, since the Great Recession in 08 and everything that's happened around there, I mean, you know, everyone has noted, I mean, very strange recovery, if there ever was a recovery from this long recession, and some people really never got out of it. You're saying there's a price to pay for all this, Harry, and you've been saying this right along, or you've been saying this artificial stimuli and everything that's happened, the way the feds have dealt with this, really just delayed the inevitable. And now I assume it's all going to break apart here. This delay has got to catch up, and that's what's going to happen, you're saying, throughout this next year, huh?
Yeah, well, and the next several years, but particularly right. This year. I mean, when stocks crash very quickly like they did in 2008, real estate takes years, and other parts of the economy take years to follow through. I think we're going to be in a difficult period from, late 2015 into probably 2022 before we go into the next demographic and global boom, which will be dominated more by emerging countries and less so China. But these crashes, man, stocks go quick. I mean, we lost 55% in 17 months just when everybody thought everything was fine in late 2007. And Ben Bernanke, even into early to mid 2008, saying, oh, the subprime crisis is no big deal. Well, it wasn't as big a deal as it seems. It just triggered a worldwide crisis financially because we were already massively too much in debt from 30 years of overexpansion, and demographics in the leading countries in the world keep turning down. Japan, U.S., now Europe. Europe's now turning down. And who's left to keep the economy going except for China? And they are slowing much faster than people think.
Yeah, they're hurting pretty bad. I mean, their stock market index has plummeted more than 40% since really the last year. Incredible, you know. Japan, they can't seem to fight out of their recession. They're in a second recession in 2 years, they're saying. And then you've got what's going on, of course, with Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain. We've seen what's happened with Greece, obviously, and now you see it happen with a lot of these other countries. In Europe, you've said right along, Europe's in a tough boat, I think for a lot of reasons. Before we break a moment, and I want to tell folks what we got coming up next here with you, but before we do, real quickly, our deficit. You've said previously, you've been most vocal in your opinion that the deficit is a fundamental vulnerability for the U.S. economy. And you've said, and I quote, steps to be taken to decrease deficit are politically painful, but must happen now. This was a few years ago. Yet, in fact, the opposite's happened, Harry. The nation has borrowed more and the debt has risen to unprecedented record numbers.
Yeah.
So,
Not only did we borrow more in the U.S. and in Europe and in the developed world, emerging countries borrowed even more. We've increased debt globally $57 trillion since 2008 after the bubble by creating more debt. And you don't fight a financial asset bubble by creating greater bubbles. But what do we got now? Greater bubbles, because politicians said, we don't want this to happen. We've got a new tool we never had before. It's called quantitative easing. Oh, we don't just lower interest rates anymore to stimulate the economy. We just print money to fill up the gap. That is absolute insanity from my point of view, and it just says, yes, the next crash will only be worse because we've kicked the can down the road, and now it's starting to hit.
Well, as we look at that can and we talk about everybody's wallet and their personal well-being, I want to take a look at the stock market with you. I think people have a lot of questions about that again, what's going to happen there. And the world as a whole, the rising deficits, what we can all do to protect ourselves. We're going to continue the conversation with Harry Dent. We'll tell you a lot more about this and right when we get back right after the break, folks. Well, we are back, and we are speaking with Harry Dent. And, Harry is so well-known, really, around the world. He's economic forecaster and New York Times best-selling author. His newest book, The Demographic Cliff, is definitely something you should check out. I just heard about it. I'm going to check it out myself. He's the editor of the free newsletter Economy and Markets. Harry, I always look to you for good advice because I always think you have sound advice. And one thing about you is, people like what you have to say, but you're not afraid to go there as well. And you can tell by the way people react to what you say, you kind of hit it head on. I don't think a lot of economists do that. So anyways, I appreciate that about you. Website for Harry is just very simple, harrydent.com. You can find out more about Harry there. So, all right, Harry, we're talking about, I want to get into the stock market in just a moment here. Yeah, I don't want to run out of time and fail to ask you this. So I got to ask you, we're in a general election. We've been down this road before. You and I have talked in previous general elections. So what happens now, Harry? What are the possibilities this year? When it comes to the election, how do you forecast this election's going to turn out? Take a stab for me and tell me what's going to happen as we approach the election at the end of 2016 here.
Well, I think this is a tough one because to me, you know, people think politics affects economy. I think the economy more affects elections. How did Obama come out of nowhere and beat the obvious front runner last time around, you know, in 2008, Hillary Clinton? Because the economy collapsed and it favored the outliers. So that's what I think is going to happen this year. I think the economy, by the time we have the dual conventions, Republican and Democratic, in July, I think the economy is going to start to look much different, and it's going to tend to favor the outliers like Trump, say, on one side, and the Republican, or Bernie Sanders on the outside. I think the people that should be most afraid of this are people like Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, and Jeb Bush is already not doing well, so that may not be an issue, but I tell people I'm a bit agnostic until I see if I'm right about the economy. Right. If I'm right, people are going to look at things very different, and they're going to say, we don't like anybody in the establishment.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You don't, I mean, and I like the way you just prefaced that with the economy impact in the election versus the vice versa of that. Do you think a socialist, do you think a Bernie Sanders could ever win this thing for real?
Well, you know, in a time when the economy's bad and there's extreme income inequality, which happened in the roaring 20s and has happened recently, and then you finally have a crash and a downturn, yeah, I mean, you know, the Democratic Party dominated from, the early 1930s for many decades because of that. So, yes, I think the Republicans have an advantage here because the last 8 years, we have not done that well, and of course, you know, the new president and administration is supposed to turn everything around. But on the other hand, as this downturn comes, Bernie has one argument that I think is powerful, that, you know, the top 1% have run away with everything. So I think that favors him and the Democrats, but the failure of the economy within a Democrat administration favors the Republicans. So I really think this one's wide open.
You really do.
And I think a three-way race, if somebody like Bloomberg or somebody else stepped in, I think it could be really interesting. I think this may be the hardest prediction to make on politics. Yeah.
Well, Harry, there's actually talk about a Bloomberg stepping in. You see that?
Yeah, well, I've heard that many months ago from Bill Ackman and other people, a major hedge fund manager. I think there are some people. I mean, Bloomberg knows he could never win straight out. He admits. He says, I'm too short and I'm Jewish, you know? I don't have a good demographic chance of winning. But if you get a wide open race that's highly contested with Trump or Cruz versus Hillary or Sanders, somebody could step in. And a guy like Bloomberg is the only one I think would have a shot to actually take a substantial part of the vote as a third party candidate and or to come into the last minute and become the Republican candidate.
But
normally that would not be a possibility. I just think that is a possibility.
Well, let me tell folks again, we're talking here with Harry Dent again. Find out more about Harry, harrydent.com. He's also the editor of the free newsletter, Economy and Markets. You can look that up as well. It's a wealth of information. The new book, you got to find out, The Demographic Cliff. Harry's got a series of books out there that have been very popular over the years. You can just look Harry Dent up. You'll get a lot on there. Put them in the, you know, Google search engine or so. But so, Harry, tell me about the stock market. Now, this has been the strangest start that we've ever seen, the losses in the market. I think a lot of wealthy people just probably lost their pants on this one, huh?
I tell you, this is funny to say, Malcolm, but the last crash really hit Homer Simpson because it hit the home market, and that's where these people are at. They don't own a lot of stock. This one's going to hit financial assets more broadly and globally, and real estate in places like New York and San Francisco and Vancouver and London and Shanghai. I think it's going to be the richest people, like in the 1930s, Ford, that get hit the hardest, although everybody does, by this bubble bursting, because we have bubbles in commodities already burst, as we forecast years ago. Real estate started to burst, much more to come. Stocks, every bubble has gone higher because of government stimulus, because they can most influence stocks. But I think stocks are going to go lower than last time. And I think that the most affluent people are going to be the ones to stand to lose the most. And they think they're invulnerable. They think, oh, we're rich and we'll always buy New York real estate and we'll always buy stocks. And I'm like, no, you don't understand history. It is the richest people to get hit the worst in a time like the Great Depression.
Okay, so let me
ask you
this.
The everyday person gets unemployed, but the richest people lose 90% of their wealth. That's
well, and yeah, obviously they have more at stake. They're out there more, so yeah. It stands to reason. But the market thus far since January 1, I mean, from things I can see here, looks like about $2.5 trillion in shareholder wealth they're saying has been wiped out. So tell me here, I've got just about a minute or so left here. Tell me, what is the correct way for people to buy stocks if they're concerned with this market crashing, Harry?
Well, you don't. You get out at the top of a bubble. We're near the top of a major bubble. I've been saying this for years, but we're finally seeing signs that the smaller stocks are greatly underperforming the large stocks. That's the first big sign. And for the first 10 days of January to be down this strongly, never before in history, and no Santa Claus rally says there's a much higher chance that stocks are going to at least take a 20-30% correction this year. I think we're going to see 50-70% in the next year and a half. So this is a time to just get out, protect yourself, look to rebuy later. It's that simple. Just get out. Stocks have little potential. They've gone nowhere for the last year and a half. Just get out, and if I'm right and things crash, you're going to have huge opportunities ahead. But don't sit there and think, oh, there's no big risk and the Fed won't let this go down. China, as you said earlier, already saw their stock market go down 45% in 2.5 months. The same thing happened in 1929 before the big crash.
All right, Harry, let me ask you this. If we get out of the stock market, what do? Put the money under the mattress, or do we invest in gold or something else? What?
Well, you know, I say put it in the mattress instead of under the mattress. Be safe as possible. Just get in short-term, high-quality certificates of deposit, CDs, treasury bills, and short-term treasury bonds. You're not looking to gain money here. You're looking to preserve your money. If you even get 3-5% yield on certain bonds or 6 or 8 on a junk bond, you're likely to lose a lot of money. Junk bonds go down as fast as stocks.
Right.
So just be safe, preserve it, and look to reinvest.
All right. Harry, thank you that again. Let me give folks again the website, harrydent.com. And I think your advice is pretty sound for everybody to adhere. There are other factors that point to a global recession in 2016. I've got some of that for you just ahead after the break. We'll continue you in just a moment here. So here we are. We come through one of the strangest recessions in our lifetime, and certainly one of the strangest recoveries. I don't think anybody can dispute that. It's been a weird recovery that a lot of people never really recovered. So they're still, you know, in that recession mode. And that's been part of the challenge, as well as the numbers that are all sort of tainted and the unemployment, and nobody's been able to really figure that out either. Well, this is Real Life. It's Malcolm Aloud here. Welcome back to the show. Well, there are other factors that will point to a very potential global recession in 2016. Now, you just heard Harry, and he gave it to you straight and told you exactly, you know, not be careful with the stock market. Don't put your money in there right now because things are unraveling. And they're not only going to unravel throughout the year here, but I think these next few years, as he pointed out, are going to be very tricky. You know, what it comes down to is there's a price to pay for all these things. I mean, it's just there's not an endless supply of arrogance and ignorance. I mean, at some point you pay the price for that arrogance and ignorance. There's no question. And our leaders have really got us off course here. And listen, I blame the entire spectrum for that. Not just one party, but I think the whole thing. And I think that's where we find ourselves now, is in a very difficult situation. And I think a lot of Americans, as I pointed out to you in the early part of the show, some of the most expensive places to raise a family. You hear some of those numbers and you kind of shake your head and say, wow, that's just to exist. That's not putting $1 in the bank to save. That's just to exist. It's to breathe. I mean, you know, so anyways, I mean, it's a lot. So I want to get into some of these other factors, if you will, that point to a global recession in 2016. And also, I mentioned to you about these emerging technologies that will change the world forever. I got to tell you, this is a fascinating conversation I want to have with you. And I'm going to give you a little bit of that today. We won't have time to cover the whole thing, but we will this week. Later in the week, on Friday, we're going to cover that entire, the emerging technologies. And you got to hear some of these things. I mean, it not only is going to change your life, but it's going to change your family's life, your kids' life for sure. And it's a quality of life. I mean, a lot of these things are, well, they're supposed to be for a better quality of life for all of us. But I think a lot of them are really a head turner where you look and you say, come on, you got to be kidding me. Well, I'm not kidding you. And when we get there, we'll talk about those emerging technologies as well. But some of these other factors, I want to just document the fact, again, what Harry was just telling us, back to the global recession. And again, we're not being, you know, doomsayers here and, you know, pessimists and, you know, that's not it. But at some point, you've got to be realistic. You got to look at the facts and you got to make a judgment based on that. And you got to remember, we came through this again, this great recession, you know, over this last decade. And, you know, we had the stock market crash in 08. We had that whole recovery. It's been really long and slow for a lot of people. In fact, it's one of the biggest things I hear all the time is, you know, where's the growth? Where's the growth? It's been, you know, it's just been so insignificant, the growth, that I think a lot of people don't even think it's there. And I think for a lot of people, they're still in the midst of a major recession. You know? So you take the unemployment line, the situation, and you know they're saying it's around 5%, but really they're saying no, it's more in the 10% range. And that's one of the things, one of the factors I want to talk to you about right now. So when you account for the discouraged workers, those rates jump from 5.3% or in that 5 range to, you know, about 10.5%, they say. So we're talking double here. So if it seems rosy to you, the unemployment picture, which is what a lot of the politicians want to paint, it's not. It's not. And there are reasons why. There are a lot of reasons why. We're going to cover some of these ahead in the days and weeks ahead on this show. I mean, there's a lot of factors of technology changing the world we're in. Robots are coming about. We're going to talk about that. And they're going to replace a great deal of jobs. A lot of jobs are going to be impacted by technology and the way of life ahead. It's not going to be the same. It's going to be different. And so there's going to be less, you know, less people needed to do certain jobs in certain industries. And so we're going to have this whole metamorphosis going on in our industry. And we're going to have to realize that. You know, one of the other factors, again, out of these factors I was telling you about, the global recession, the European situation, it's gotten worse, my friends, a lot worse. You look at Greece was only the tipping point here, one of the tipping points, but Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Spain, they've all had to be bailed out by the European Union, the IMF. And, you know, there's mandatory austerity measures being put in place, but they don't want to follow them. You see all the riots in the street and the problems. I mean, they don't want to pay the money back, which doesn't make a lot of sense because, you know, you borrow. I mean, we all learned that as kids, and you borrow money, you have to pay it back. So, but Europe's having a real struggle with this austerity. And it's something we have a problem with in the United States as well. We borrow all this money. Look at our deficits. And hell, they don't want to pay it back either. In fact, they're not paying it back. Just growing worse and worse. Chinese bubble has begun to pop. We've seen that in recent weeks here, friends. I mean, and again, it's a global economy. So when you say, well, why does it matter? Well, because as China slips into this recession, their economy, well, it's going to drag the rest of the world with it. And you can count on that. They're a big economy, second biggest economy in the world. So it's going to be another factor. Stock market is way off in China. We were talking about that with Harry Dent. And, I mean, they've lost, I think, around 40%, at least plus, in that market value. So, you know, a lot of people are getting poorer when you hear those kinds of numbers, just as they are here in the stock market here. You want to be careful and listen to Harry's advice there. You may want to take his advice seriously, or you're going to be gambling that, you know. Student loans. You know, I always hear that, and I always sort of tune it out because I don't think it really impacts me. But you know what? As you look into it, it's going to impact all of us in a big way. See, here's the problem. I can put it into just brass taxes for you. Real simple. The government backs all these student loans, okay? So the rating agencies, they put a very high credit rating on these debts because, after all, it's Uncle Sam, and Uncle Sam's rich, right? Yeah, sure. And, of course, the kids and the students, most of them don't have the ability to even repay. I mean, that's the whole idea. That's the concept. These are young people, and we know that, you know? It's not a secret. Well, government's on the hook now for over $1.2 trillion. And $1.2 trillion. And, you know, to give you a perspective, Australia's GDP last year was, you know, less than $900 billion. I mean, you get it? Their entire GDP of that country, and we're $1.2 trillion just in student debt. So that give you a little perspective, maybe? Yeah. I mean, and so that's a big problem. Big problem. And that's going to bust, they say, and that's going to be a real problem to the economy. That one figure itself and that one factor could decimate our economy, many experts are saying. We talked about the unemployment picture again. Central banks have no room to work with. Absolutely no room left, period. They've done it all. Their hands are tied to revert the next recession. That's the other problem. I think Harry was hinting toward as well. And economic data shows the patterns are very similar to other recessions. Retail sales are dropping. I shared that with you last time. They dropped in December. U.S. factory orders have dropped the most since the collapse of Lehman Brothers, right? U.S. export growth has been weakening. Corporate profits are declining. A lot of these factors are going to play into the big picture, and they're going to play into this entire recession, this global economy and global recession in 2016, and I think it's going to be a real problem ahead. So that's something we want to pay attention to, and we want to watch that and see, you know, how we can, you know, change our lives a little bit, and what do we have to do to get through. Now, having said that, I want to say to you, I believe what's going to happen next is, although I've just given you a whole lot to chew on here between Harry Dent and what I just shared with you, I do believe there are some opportunities ahead. And I think if you're smart and you play out these opportunities, I think you'll get somewhere. I think anytime this happens, you know, when bad things sometime unravel or happen, opportunities come from that. So I don't see it as entire doom and gloom unless you've taken your entire whatever and put it into the market, or you haven't prepared for what might be tomorrow. But I think if you buckle your belt a little tighter, as I say, always put your seatbelt on here, and you do that, and you go for some other opportunities. Don't hunker down and do nothing. You know, there are, in fact, history shows during recessions in the past and tough times, you know, good things can come out of that, innovations. Talking about innovations, Gray Scott, a futurist, he's an emerging technology expert. He's got an unbelievable list of things here, these emerging technologies. We're going to take this on this Friday on the show. You got to tune into the show, but I want to share one with you off of this list right now. And this one actually excites me, and it's age reversal. Now, I've been hearing a lot about this in recent months, so don't just poo-poo it. I mean, there's some real data here, folks. The emergence of the true biological age reversal will happen by, get this, 2025. Well, there's hope for us kids. That's in my lifetime. Might still help me out. Who knows? Maybe I'll be around a little bit longer on talk radio with you. Wouldn't that be nice, huh? So this age reversal, they're already having success with it. It's published reports in Nature Scientific Reports, and they're seeing this in animals. They've been testing right along, but also in people. And the numbers are staggering. I'm going to share more of this with you on the Friday show, but they're talking about taking a 60-year-old human and feeling like you're 20 years old. Give me some of that, kids. That's what I'm talking about. I can use a little age reversal at this point. Anyways, these emerging technologies are going to change the way we think and act and live. We'll be talking about that this week on the show. Have an exciting week of shows coming up with you here. Hey, listen, it's been great to have you with me today. This is Real Life on the Brink here. It's Malcolm Out Loud. Remember, get involved, get loud.